If I've understood it correctly, that our hosts, host and hostess, would like us to discuss, would like to share some discussion on the stages of bhakti and the symptoms of bhakti and how to move forward and what lies ahead, what's on the map ahead of us. Rupa Goswami teaches Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatriki, Vidhim Vina, Aikantiki Harer, Bhaktir, Utpattaya Vakalpate. Or, when trying to understand any spiritual subject matter, one needs to make reference to Shruti, Smriti, Puranas, the Pancharatras, etc., the authorized Vedic literature, because without referring to authorized Vedic literature, Utpat, it's simply a disturbance or a big disturbance. Utpattaya vikalpate. So, in Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion of the first six chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the final verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that, first he says, of all means of elevation, by all means be a yogi, and of all forms of yoga, the uttama form of yoga is Shadhavan Bhajate Yomam Samayukta Uttama Mataha. The kirtan's over, guys. What's the deal?
AC.
AC? Well, we don't want to be without the AC. Can you tie it or something? So, in the beginning of chapter 7, the very first verse of chapter 7, Krishna makes a promise to Arjuna. He says, I'm now going to describe to you how you can do that, how you can practice yoga with full consciousness of Krishna, with mind attached to Krishna. Please note that in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that's the topmost. And if you can't do that, then follow the regulations of bhakti. If you can't do that, then work for me. If you can't do that, and so on. But the topmost is the one that Krishna says at the beginning of chapter 7. I'm going to explain to you how to practice yoga with consciousness, full consciousness of me, with mind attached to me. And this way you can know me in full, free from doubt. So, in the purport of that verse, that 7.1 Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada makes reference to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, texts 17 through 21. These are very important verses in the Bhagavatam that outline the process and also the stages of bhakti. Very good, very good. The process and the stages of bhakti, I'll read because it's so nice. In fact, it's not only so nice in reference to this promise that Krishna makes to Arjuna, but Prabhupada quotes these very same verses in his arrival prayer You know about that? The arrival prayer when Krishna, when Prabhupada first came to reach the Boston Harbor, and he wrote one very, very beautiful prayer. Markine Bhagavat Dharma in Bengali, in its translation. The first verse is, Krishna, why have you brought me here? Mission impossible. In this place that you brought me to, I see nothing but ignorance and passion, thick. And the message that I've come on your behalf to deliver is the message of Shuddha Sattva. So, why have you brought me here? As if there's a place of Shuddha Sattva recipients somewhere else on the planet. But those who are very much influenced by ignorance and passion, how are they going to understand this message of pure goodness? And then he quotes these verses directly in this poem to Krishna. Here's how it's translated differently in our songbook. It's translated differently in the verse by verse in the Bhagavatam. It's translated slightly differently here. But here's the translation. This is stages of bhakti and the means of achieving those stages of bhakti. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literatures. Shunvata Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Ridyantak Stokya Bhadrani Vidhunoti Suritsatam Nashtaprayeshu Abhadreshu. Such nice verses. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloki Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtuki Tadarajastamo Bhava Kamalo Bhada Yasye Cheta Etaya Navidam Stitvam Satve Prasidati Evam Prasanna Manaso Bhagavad Bhakti Yogataha Janayati Yashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayata Aitakam Amuktas, excuse me, Bhagavad Tattva Vigyanam Amuktas Sangash Jayate. So, translation. This is one of three references I'm going to mention. To hear about Krishna from Vedic literature, or to hear from him directly through Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada snuck that in there. Or hear about him directly through Bhagavad Gita. It doesn't say that in the Sanskrit, but Krishna Katha. So about Krishna or from Krishna is Krishna Katha. As itself, punya, or righteous activity. And for one who hears about Krishna, Lord Krishna, who is dwelling within everyone's heart, acts as the best well-wishing friend and purifies the devotee who constantly engages in hearing about him. So, Hridyantakstha, he's situated within the heart. Ki abhadrani, removes the abhadras, or inauspicious things, from the heart. When he sees, hears this person, the soul, who's striving to hear about him. It's Krishna from within the heart, as well as the messages of Krishna directly, because there's no difference. The messages of Krishna and Krishna from within the heart. Double action. Cleanse the heart. Then, very quickly, nashta prayeshu abhadreshu. Again, abhadras are nashta praya, almost praya, prayeshu, almost completely destroyed, almost. That's very quick. We just went through dirty heart to almost completely destroyed. So there's some, this is paralleling this message with Rupa Goswami's teachings. So this is another reference. You can find this other reference in the purport of 410 Bhagavad Gita. 410 Bhagavad Gita, O note takers. Where the stages of bhakti are found from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that those stages of bhakti, adau, shraddha, there's nine stages. There's preliminary faith, adau, shraddha, tata, sadhu sangha, second stage. One who has a little faith, Krishna sends some sadhu association. And the third stage is bhajana kriya. One does with sadhus what sadhus do. One engages in bhajan or Krishna katha, similar to the message of the Bhagavatam. And then the fourth stage, we're moving right along, is anartha nivritti syat. Fourth stage is eradication, nivritti, of anartha. So the language of Rupa Goswami is anartha, the language of Bhagavatam is abhadra, same import. Unwanted things or inauspicious things are both in pretty much the same category. So then what happens? Anartha nivritti syat. One comes to the stage of steady devotion, nishtha. So beginning of shraddha, and further advancement is nishtha, firm faith. So the beginning stage is what Prabhupada calls soft and pliable. Intermediate stage is firm. And ultimate stage is fixed and immovable. Unshakable faith. Even in the nishtha stage, it's firm. That is, even if some opposing idea comes along, one may not know how to refute that opposing idea, but faith isn't moved. And in the advanced stage, any idea comes along and it can be refuted on the strength of Shastra. So, we're already at stage 5 out of 9. From just 2 verses, or actually 1 verse, 1.5 verses of the Bhagavatam. So, we'll go back to the Bhagavatam. This is 1:18. Nashta prayeshu apadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Nityam bhagavata sevaya. Always engaged in devotional service. Nityam bhagavata. So serving the book bhagavat and the person bhagavat. The book bhagavat by hearing it. And the person bhagavat by hearing from the person, and then the fruit of that hearing from the book and the person is one performs the activities that are described in the book and by the person. Executing. Prabhupada would use the word discharging the duties of devotional service. It's still in vidhi bhakti. That's the third reference. Here's the third reference. One reference is these verses from the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, about stages of bhakti. Second reference is Rupa Goswami from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. That's mentioned here in 410 Bhagavad Gita. It's 1:4, 14, and 15 from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, or it's found in Nectar Devotion, stages of bhakti. So another reference is Nectar Devotion itself. Nectar Devotion itself is divided into 3 categories, and then there's subcategories of those 3. Vaidhi Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and Prema Bhakti. So we mainly, or we study Nectar Devotion for our Bhakti Shastri certificate or Bhakti Shastri study. We study verses 1 through 19 because it's mainly about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, which is what we really need to know. But it gives a glimpse of the future stages of Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. But But those are the three main divisions. It's in waves, because it's the ocean. And first wave is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, there's vittis. That's things that you're supposed to do, and things you're not supposed to do. So injunctions and prohibitions with Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And connecting that message with Avrupa Goswami, with this list of nine stages of bhakti and the verses from the Bhagavatam, here's how Prabhupada put it very simply. There's the practice of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, where, for example, we're to do things like rise early in the morning and take a bath and come before the deity. And there are things to do when you come before the deity. You make a sound. You're like entering someone's room. So you knock on the door, ring a bell, or speak the name of the deity as you enter the room. And you come before the deity and pay obeisances, etc. There's procedures, vidhis. As those vidhis purify the heart, then a stage will come, Prabhupada describes, where it's not just because it's regulative, but one begins to anticipate with eagerness some opportunity to serve the deity, some opportunity to chant the holy name, another chance this morning to directly associate with Krishna through his holy name. And there's eagerness and anticipation of preparing for a festival and planning to make outfits for the deity and decorations and so on and so on and so on. Not just in a regulative fashion, but in a spontaneous fashion. So Nectar Devotion describes within this Vidhi Sadhana Bhakti, there's Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. It's described right in Nectar Devotion. There's a sadhana for those who are on the Raganuga platform that naturally arises from practice, from the regulative stage. So we're not there yet, but we can look far off into the horizon, and you get this voice from Rupa Goswami that says, that's what's out there. So don't imagine yourself to be out there. You can understand that's Rupa Goswami telling us, that's what the map says, that's what's out there. We should not imitate or pretend or something that we're there, because there's a great deal of purification needed prior to getting there. But in that, some indication is with eagerness, like Prabhupada describes when the stage of purification exists. There's no question of becoming tired when hearing and chanting all day long. No question of becoming tired. So we're not there. We get tired. But on the spontaneous stage, on the stage of ruchi, beyond nishtak, next comes ruchi. So I'm moving back again to this, the stages of bhakti by Rupa Goswami. Where ruchi is there, one gets energy, enlivened, transcendentally enlivened, so that even if you're tired, there's some chance for hearing. Oh, I'm enlivened. Some hearing. Instead of the other way around. I was doing okay until there was all this hearing, and then I started getting tired. So, there are symptoms of one who is on such a stage. I understand there's some hearing of Madhurya Kandambani topic. So in in the Madhurya Kandamani topic on this, beyond the stage of nishtha, where faith is firm, then, and the anarthas are nearly completely gone, nashta, prayeshu, abhadreshu, prayeshu, just like there's a verse in the Bhagavatam, prayinat prayushap shabyat kalavas when you gauge in a mandak samanda matayo manda bhagya yupandruta. It's describing in the first chapter that in this age of Kali, almost all good qualities are destroyed. And what's left is being quickly destroyed. That's the age of Kali, it's the feature of this age of Kali. So, praya. So, nishtha is when anarthas are almost gone. Then there's some taste. Vishwanath Chakravarti describes that that stage of taste has two divisions. First, where the elements are very nicely put together, then one has a taste. And the other is, it doesn't matter how nicely the elements are put together, it's just the principle of bhakti. Like example is deity worship. When the deity worship is done very, very nicely, and there are nice decorations and nice floral arrangements and nice dress and nice. Oh, very nice. You have some appreciation. Or when the prasadam is very, very nice. Oh, so nice. Then we like. Or when there's kirtan and the music accompaniment and the voice and the everything is very, very, very expertly done. Then we enjoy kirtan. Something like that. These very examples are given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. But on the advanced stage of ruchi, doesn't matter. Not that somebody, because they speak the Bhagavatam with great literary ornamentation of alliteration and simile and so forth and so on. Oh, I like Srimad Bhagavatam recitation. And if it doesn't have the comparable degree of polish, material embellishments, then I don't have the same enthusiasm. But on the advanced stage, the real criterion is the purity of the worship or the cooking or the kirtan or the Bhagavatam recitation or whatever it is that's a very simple place where there's pure devotion. One can be very, very inspired by that simplicity and purity, not because it's all fabulously ornamented and decorated. Be very simple. So now we'll go to what the Bhagavatam says on this. This is tada rajastamo bhava kamalobhada yasjaye cheta etar anavidham stittam satve prasidati. Translation. By development of devotional service, one becomes freed from the modes of passion and ignorance, and thus material lusts and avarice are diminished. When these impurities or symptoms, how can one tell who is advanced? There was this discussion the other day. How can we see who is situated in self-realization? The candidate remains steady. This was at the college on Thursday night. Someone was asking like that. There's symptoms. By development of devotional service, when these impurities are wiped away, the candidate remains steady in his position of pure goodness and becomes enlivened by devotional service and understands the science of God perfectly. Wow. Evam prasanna manaso. Bhagavad Bhakti Yogatah, that he understands the science. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, Mukta Sangasya Jayate, he's liberated. One doesn't need to independently strive for liberation. One needs to strive to come to appreciate Krishna and want to serve Krishna nicely. And when that arises, Mukta Sangasya Jayate, there's only one more verse out of this series. Vidyante Hridaya Grantis. The Hridaya Grantis, the knot in the heart is cut. Chidyante Sarva Sangshaya, all doubts are removed. Shiyante, nice. Vidyante, Chidyante, Shiyante. Chasya Karmani Drishta Evat Manishware, one sees all living entities equal on the platform of the soul. Prabhupada translates, thus Bhakti Yoga severs the hard knot of material affection and enables one to come at once to the stage of Asamshaya Samagram, or understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth. So that's up there. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangasya Jayate. So going again to Rupa Goswami's terminology, there's ruchi, there's taste. So one doesn't need to, just because of a regulative duty, I finish my rounds and I read my prescribed number of pages of Bhagavad Gita a day, and I do my cooking and I make my offering, and let's see, what else do I have to do? And then I finish, okay, I have to do that too, and I finish my duties in a regulative fashion. But in this stage, there's taste. I want to do, and I anticipate various ways to take this wonderful opportunity of hearing and chanting and worshiping and remembering and praying and serving and celebrating and sharing, and with great eagerness, with great taste. And following that sixth stage comes the seventh stage. Seventh stage is attachment. Having let go of the material attachments, then there's spiritual attachment. Exclusive spiritual attachment. Like what Kunti was praying for. Exclusive spiritual attachment in relationship with her father's family and her own family. Exclusive spiritual attachment. Asakti. I'll read a little bit what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes about attachment. When the next stage of doing bhajan, so it starts, it's continuously the same activity, bhajana kriya, in the association of devotees, sadhu sangha, the consciousness becomes elevated. And same, it's the preliminary faith is just now maturing. One way the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes the stages of bhakti as different stages of faith. Like a seed that grows into a plant, and the plant that grows produces leaves, and eventually it produces flowers, and eventually produces fruits. But it's the same plant in the seed as in the bearing fruit stage. Same, he explains, bhakti is nothing but faith being nurtured. So we have to be very careful of those things that damage faith. Our own faith being damaged, or damaging others' faith. We want to nurture faith and nurture the faith of others. That's what bhakti is in different stages. It's nurtured by this watering process, like the creeper, the seed is by being in moisture. It's a seed that's dry on the shelf or in a jar or in a bag or something, little bag of mung dal. Break open the bag and put it in a little vial of a little dish of water and it'll sprout by moisture and sunlight. So it's alive, it's just in a dormant state. So bhakti is also alive within the heart of everyone, and specific devotion unto Krishna is alive within the heart of every living being, and it's awakened by the watering process of hearing and chanting. So this bhajan stage or activity, when it becomes mature beyond the struggling with anarthas to the stage of steady faith, to the stage of taste, now to the stage of attachment, when the taste for doing bhajan reaches extreme depth, and Krishna becomes the very object of one's devotional service, one attains to asakti or attachment. At the stage of asakti, the desire creeper of bhakti bears clusters of buds heralding the swift appearance of flowers of bhava and the fruit of prema. The difference between the ruchi and asakti is that ruchi mainly has bhajan or devotional practice as its subject, while asakti mainly has the Lord, the object of bhajan, as its subject. What does that mean? Krishna is the enjoyer. And one is attached to Krishna being the enjoyer. Not one is attached to, oh, I really like this enjoyment here. At the stage of attachment, it's Krishna is everything. And I become the enjoyed by Krishna. Asakti polishes the mirror of the heart to such a state of that the reflection of the Lord suddenly seems to be almost visible there. So this metaphor of the mirror of the heart is from Mahaprabhu, Chaita Darpana Marjanam. When the heart is so much purified that it feels like Krishna is soon going to appear, like we were discussing this morning when the residents of Dwarka were anticipating that Krishna is going to return. They heard the Kurukshetra battle is over, Maharaj Yudhisthira is installed. They were getting messages. And soon Krishna is going to come. But Krishna didn't come right away because Yudhisthira persuaded Krishna, please stay. He asked Krishna to stay for a few months, and Krishna stayed, a few days, and Krishna stayed for a few months. When everything became very peaceful, Maharaj Yudhisthira had reconciled everything and was firmly situated in the role of king. Krishna left. And the residents of Dwarka heard Krishna's coming. And they were anticipating Krishna's coming because he's their life and soul. They're fully attached to him. When they heard that Krishna's on the outskirts of Dwarka, they heard his conch shell. They lost it. They came running to see Krishna because of he's the exclusive object. This is asakti. Soon Krishna is going to appear. When will Krishna appear? And then he appeared. So there's this nice chapter. There's different characterizations of how a devotee at a stage of attachment speaks, how they address others, how they see things in nature, how they, you know, their internal life. Their external life is the same as our external life or anybody's external life, but their internal life is attached to Krishna and with the expectation soon Krishna will appear. Gives the example. They're walking in the forest and they see some deer in the forest and they think, oh, this is maybe a sign from Krishna. If the deer look at me, look now looking at me, take a few steps towards me, that's a sign that Krishna will soon come. It's not a sign that Krishna will soon come. But they're so attached to Krishna, they're taking everything in relation to Krishna. Or they ask somebody, when will I see the Lord of my life, Krishna Bhagavan? And the person says, never. So they don't get devastated, they just think, I wonder if there's a deeper meaning to it. Because everything is in relation. It's not just speculation, it's their feeling of attachment. Everything is seen in relation to Krishna. Because that's where their heart is. Having now become so thoroughly cleansed, the expectation of meeting Krishna, seeing Krishna, being with Krishna, experiencing Krishna directly. And then the stage of bhava is described in a very simple way, I can say, that like an explosion, some ecstatic emotion appears, erupts is the word that's used. And one has a sense, now I've seen Krishna, Krishna appears, and then he suddenly disappears. One's devastated. And then anticipation again, back to the asakti. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? And then sometime another ecstasy, an explosion, another eruption of something that just explodes one's attention to Krishna. That's the stage of bhava. And the stage of prema is those explosions are multiple simultaneous explosions and a non-ending string of explosions of ecstatic love. That's prema. So let's go back to where we are. We'll go back to what Rupa Goswami is describing. The stage of nishta, followed by asakti, followed by taste, then attachment, then ecstasy. So in the raga nuga sadhana bhakti that's described in nectar devotion, there's a sadhana. It's not that somebody was asking me recently. Somebody somewhere was asking. My thoughts are going to the idea of being Krishna's lover. I said, well, we'll put on the brakes. Let's go for purity and simplicity and humility. And when one's heart is fully pure, that then this spontaneous stage may come. And even in the spontaneous stage, it's not imagining in my mind, you know, what it would be like or having some feeling like that. Rather, it's in the mood of service that the sadhana of raga nuga, sadhana bhakti, is one continues in an unflinching, fixed manner in the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, while internally one's mind becomes attracted naturally because there's a natural relationship that one has, a rasa that one has with Krishna, to a particular eternal associate. A ragatmika bhakta. An example is given of Mother Jasoda, for example. So, like we read in Krishna book or Srimad Bhagavatam, of how Mother Jasoda is dressed. So we may just read over it like, hey, I want to get to the story, forget about how she's dressed. But for the raganuga sadhana bhakta, the flowers in Mother Jasoda's hair and her eyes and her smile, and it's all part of the sadhana that one internally meditates on the mood, the feelings of Mother Jasoda, and how she acts with Krishna, and sometimes she feels anxious, and sometimes she feels very happy, and you know, one meditates on that ragatmika bhakta, the perfected soul, internally, in the mood of wishing to serve them. And it's not something to imitate, it's something that in the state of purity, in this following the asakti stage, it arises. It's not something imagined or, you know, let's see, spin the wheel, I like that one, okay, that one, I'll work on that one. It's not like that. It arises naturally from the heart. And then there's a sadhana involved in it. And from that sadhana comes the bhava bhakti stage. So that's the sadhana bhakti. Then it brings one to the bhava bhakti stage. And the bhava bhakti stage, the description I've already briefly given, but just some eruption of that one in the anticipation of meeting with Krishna, like the residents of Dwarka. Prabhupada specifically says in his commentary, right in the first canto, that these residents of Dwarka are on the platform of spontaneous devotional service. Their anticipation of Krishna is then suddenly fulfilled. Krishna appears. Why does Krishna appear? Why does Krishna go to Dwarka? Because of the love of the residents of Dwarka. Why does Krishna appear in this world? Because of fulfilling the desire of his devotees. Although there's these external reasons, Pritranaya Sadhanam and Vinashaya Chaduskatam and Dharma Sangs, he does those things because he's Krishna. He is his Supreme Lord. He does those things. But the deeper sense is ultimately the fulfillment of the desires of his devotees. He appears. And there, when he appears, they feel ecstasy. Bhava bhakti. And when that bhava manifestation mixes in with other bhavas and is churning in a unceasing way, unstoppable. Like, you know, the gopis want to stop it, put on the brakes, let's try to forget Krishna. They can't forget Krishna. There's no brakes. It's unstoppable. Or in the language of Lord Kapila Dev to Devahuti, he likens prema bhakti to, or devotional service in the stage of pure goodness is where, like the Ganges during rainy season, it's unstoppable. Stop. You can't stop the Ganges. What to speak of it, rainy season. You know, put your hand out in the water and say stop, or build a dam. It just flows over the dam. It's, you know, it's not going to stop. The inexorable flow. As soon as one hears about Krishna, one's mind goes and can't be checked. Instead of, whoa, I gotta, come on, mind, let's pay attention. That's the stage of prema, or devotional service that's free from the contamination of modes of nature. Tadara jastamo bhava kama bhavada yasti cheta etayanat stitvam sate prasidati. It just arises. It's that which arises is like the awakening of the plant that's dormant in a seed stage. It's something that's within us already. It just arises if we follow properly. So now that takes us back to the vittis. That's following properly. We do the do's, avoid the don'ts. But the essence is not the do's and the don'ts. The essence is that attraction for Krishna. Our feelings for Krishna. Our wishing to serve Krishna. To wishing to always be in a loving relationship with Krishna. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. That's the essence. The vittis are not the essence. although we can't abandon them because they're not the essence, they are essential, who carry us. That what I've just described is like a skeleton. You know, and on the skeleton the body hangs. So the message of the Bhagavatam is just an enriching of those essential topics so that we can understand how to come to the ultimate stage, not in a cheap or imitation way, but in a genuine way. Like, for example, the whole Dhruva Maharaj description in the Bhagavatam is describing how, regardless of age, Dhruva was just a small boy. It's not age-specific or education-specific or intelligence-specific. It's even, you know, he was pretty contaminated with material desire. Big time material desire. It was like revenge and I want power. And with this power, I'll get my revenge. It wasn't very elevated motivation at all. But he had some, by the indication of his mother, some idea that he could get what he wanted by the grace of Vishnu, and so he wanted to go to Vishnu and get what he wanted. Karma Mishra Bhakti, or Kama Mishra Bhakti, a devotion that's mixed with material motivation. Sound familiar? So, how to get beyond the material motivation portion and get into the realm of pure devotion. So the narration of Dhruva is very important for understanding how to get beyond that. And he certainly did his sadhana, but it's not just his sadhana, nor was it just his motivation. It was the mercy of Narada. And he understood that. He understood that even before he undertook his practice, what to speak of in the middle and at the end. So, that with saying that message slightly differently, we're very dependent in the progressing through the stages of devotion upon mercy. Very dependent upon mercy. Say it the other way. Without mercy, we're not going anywhere. Whatever we may do and not do. However strict of followers. Rupa Goswami teaches this also. One deterrent for spiritual progress is neglecting to follow the vidhis. Another deterrent for spiritual progress is following the vidhis without understanding the purpose behind the vidhis and thinking that's all in all. It's not all in all. What's the vidhis are a means to help us achieve Krishna, purity, and our attraction for Krishna. Just like today, coming together and having kirtan and discussing devotional service, associating with one another, taking prasadam. These are all practices that have the ultimate purpose of awakening our attraction for Krishna and leaving behind the asat sangha, the attraction and attachment for material things. Just going to read this verse, 4:10 Bhagavad Gita. It's a nice verse, an important verse. Vita raga paya krodha man maya mam upashrita. So speaking about mam upashrita, taking shelter of Krishna, in order to take shelter of Krishna, one has to abandon or go beyond ita, raga, bhaya, and krodha. Raga, attraction for material enjoyment. Bhaya, fear of one's personal identity in the liberated state. And krodha, frustration that is following, anger that's following frustration. Prabhupada writes, to get rid of these three stages of material concept of life, one has to, here's the how to, take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative practices of devotional life. The last stage of the devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of Godhead. That was like a real fast forward. Sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. And the core elements are taking full shelter, complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the spiritual master, following the vidhis of vidhi sadhana bhakti. That's like really reduced to the simple components. In the this very same phrase, vita raga bhaya krodha, this in 4.10 Bhagavad Gita, we heard the very same in the Bhagavatam class yesterday morning at the temple, where in the purport Prabhupada was referring to the stage of Vasudev, of Samadvat, where he was situated in equanimity, such an equanimity that because he had made this promise to give his children one by one to Kamsa, he came and brought the child to Kamsa and said, here. Didn't try to hide, run, play games. He just brought the child, and Kamsa was just amazed. So that phrase, Vita Raga Vaya Krodha, appears in Bhagavad Gita 2.56. Stithadi Munir Uchate. So this, I'm making this reference for a purpose. It's where the stithadi muni, where one's mind is completely fixed. So normally our mind isn't completely fixed. Our mind is all over the place. But when we overcome the impurities of material attraction and repulsion, that's raga and bhaya and krodha, anger at the situations of life. We can overcome that material attraction, repulsion, and become situated fully in the spiritual position, spiritual conception of life. Sita dimuni, the mind becomes steady. And the quality of pure goodness is evidenced. Then naturally, good qualities, all good qualities, like last night speaking about development of character, all good qualities will manifest within the person who is fixed in devotion. Like Prabhupada said, how will we know who is your disciple? They are ideal gentlemen. We didn't just speak, you know, they're lost in a world of ecstasy. That's my devotee. He described they're perfect in character, perfect in their behavior and character. Ideal gentleman. That's a tall order. Either one of them is a tall order. But that's a symptom of one who is advancing in spiritual life. Because the mind and senses are controlled. The disturbing elements are cleansed by the process of devotional service. So I don't know if that's what you were hoping to hear, but that's where we are in the map of where we're going and how to get there. Any discussion? Yes. Can you speak a little louder? You have a question regarding?
Two different classes of devotees, like, I remember, this is concerning to take complete shelter of the Lord guided by the spiritual master.
Okay.
I remember once you mentioning that there are some people who are very serious, but some others just get the benefit of chanting. I mean, they don't get very serious, but even that little bit of chanting that they do, they get the benefit out of it. So is it because they're not getting the mercy, or is it because they're not qualified for it? Why is it that some people end up being more serious than others?
It's a question of what they want. It's a question of what they want. And Krishna reciprocates with what we want. You better be careful. Each of us must be careful what we want. Our sankalpa, you know, what our expectation or hope is. So those that are more serious have a deeper or more thoughtful understanding of what one's aspiration should be, and they invest themselves in that. Even they may be far from it, they aspire for that. In some cases, we don't even know what we should aspire for. We're just going along with the flow, and the flow says, you know, you should get money, or you should get honor and distinction and praise and get all those nice things in life, and then you'll be happy. So we buy into that, okay, I should go for that. We don't necessarily know what we should aspire for. But through association, it's a good fortune, it's a great fortune when one gets the association of those who are sharing that real message. Like one discussion the other day was someone was appreciating how every verse of Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada is very clearly presenting the conclusion. Pure devotional service. Like from the very beginning. Pure devotional service, 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 pure devotional service. And Srimad Bhagavatam is pure devotional service. So to give people the message of pure devotional service, at least they have the opportunity. So it depends on what they covet, what their aspiration is. I'm not interested in it. I want to get that carrot. I want to get that, you know, can this help me get that carrot? I want some prestige. I want some recognition. I want to be successful. I want to be wealthy. I want position. And they gauge in terms of that. They don't even hear the message. But, so through association, that can be replaced, at least if one is thoughtful. The very temporary nature, just like we were reading this morning about benefits that may derive, that one may derive from material gain or material knowledge. It's all taken away. It's all temporary. And one who understands that doesn't, they change their aspiration from temporary to eternal. So one who is serious, was the word that you were using, or sincerely cultivating the process, it's they've taken the association in a using Prabhupada's phrase, with submissive oral reception. That's how he's described it. So supposing we let's say that amongst us here assembled today, we at least in theory accept pure devotional service should be our goal. Then another factor is maintaining material attachments. I know that that's the goal, but I can't let go of, this was discussed yesterday, we can't let go of my attachments. These certain ones of them, they're just too important to me. And so that person isn't going to make the same advancement as one who's ready to let those attachments go. Like when we did our little Sankalpa ceremony at the Java retreat, one part of it was what we'll take with us and the other was what we'll leave behind. Right? That's the same idea I'm expressing. Anything else? Yes?
Anatta's arise in our heart. Some are obvious to me, but some are not so obvious. How can I identify them and how can I rid of take measurable steps to rid of?
Did you hear the question? Anarthas that arise in the heart, how do we detect what they are and how to get rid of them, essentially? Especially the ones that we're not able to notice so well. First and primary thing is our business is bhajana kriya. And from, that's like the engine that drives the whole thing. And when we're moving, when we're on the path of devotion, practice of devotion to Krishna, that will give us both the awareness and the strength and even the knowledge in detail how to remove. But it's on the strength of bhajan. So our attention should primarily go to doing our devotional practices very carefully. When we do that, to the degree that we have that accomplished, then what those more subtle anarthas are will stare us in the face. To the point where we'll cringe. Wow. And when we're covered, we don't even see them. Because our consciousness is dull and we're not able to perceive those impurities. So that means we're, meanwhile, just going along with life, just kind of steamrolling people with our impurities and not even noticing it. So main focus should go to performing our activities with great focus of attention and effort, concentration. And as unwanted things arise, they will come to our attention. And if we keep the association of very experienced devotees in a appropriate time and manner and place and circumstance, they'll help us understand. If we don't see it, they'll help us see it. And they'll help guide us how to address it. But certainly one of the components of addressing is staying focused on very careful sadhana. Because otherwise we won't see it, or it'll be elusive, or we won't have the strength, we'll feel overwhelmed by the circumstance, fall into lamentation, become frustrated with ourselves, and so on. Yes?
This is Ramya had asked many times, but the different states of faith, and due to the so many external things going on now, there is a lot of what if scenarios have been proposed.
What a lot if, of which scenarios?
What if? What this happens, what oh. that happens. So, I get people that it's just like, even if you are okay, if you go to work, and people say, okay, this is happening, you know, so. Probably, I think you answered before.
Can you give a what if example?
What if your job goes off, you know, like I'm looking, or what if something happens, the economy is such a way that, like, what happens to the value of money, you know?
Okay.
So many things, you know, like, going on, especially in this economy. And because of that, what happens is, one part of mind says, don't worry, surrender to Krishna, Krishna will take care. The other part of mind says, you have to do your homework, you know, you got to do it, you know, are you doing it properly, are you checking, you know, it's like I'm getting vacillated or oscillating between the two extremes, basically. How do I,
The type of world that we're living in is a very dangerous place. We shouldn't think otherwise. It's a very dangerous place. At any moment, all of this house of cards can fall. The whole deal. Because that's the nature of the place. The economy and their dependencies and energy and, you know, safety and... That's the nature of the place. And the artificial way of life that people have generated has made it even more so. So now, what's the plan? The plan is, a thoughtful person is, let me solve these problems ultimately. And that is, return to the spiritual world and take those who are near and dear to me to the spiritual world. That's primary. Then secondary is, you know, the house of cards. So the more you invest your consciousness in making this temporary place permanent, you have just bought into illusion. Because temporary place is never going to become permanent. It's never going to become safe and stable. Having said that, there's some basics that we can consider, like, you know, where is it more unstable? You know, should I build a house on the fault line in San Francisco that they know every 3 years they have a big earthquake? You know, so some amount of homework doing is sensible. Should I hurry up and go buy that cheap land down right by New Orleans and buy a house right by the eddies and see what happens next year? Maybe not. No. So to a degree, one has to take the house of cards' fragile nature into consideration. But it's not our, you know, our primary consciousness should be invested in attaining sat and making a permanent solution to this very fragile situation. And that's a question of faith. To the degree that one has transcendental faith, one need not invest one drop of energy in that house of cards, or the, you know, the reflection in the mirror. Put a nice face on the reflection in the mirror. Now everything's okay. It's illusion. To the degree that one doesn't have that strong faith, then make arrangements. Knowing full well is a very dangerous place. Like our acharyas describe, that the security is like a drop of water on a lotus petal. A little wind and the drop of water falls from the lotus petal. The movement of the lotus will drop the water. That's how secure we are. It's an illusion. There's no security here. So relatively, there's more foolish actions. We should make a reasonable look at what's going on around us in this world of illusion, and don't go so deeply into it. You know, don't expose yourself to the most dangerous things. Like this, I was just discussing it with this with some other devotees. This spiritual economics thing, the maximizers and satisfizers. The maximizers may, often will, by just investing everything in making the best choice with the options they have, get on the other end a better arrangement. But they're in complete anxiety. Their happiness is gone. Any discretionary time for things that are of deeper value, there is no time for them because they're maximizers. It's got to make the best choice. You do the basic things. Rather, the satisfizer model is you look, you examine, you do a reasonable amount of investigation, then you make a choice, and that, you know, you let move on. So that, this valuable human energy can be used for its ultimate purpose. The finer sentiments and the finer faculties of life can be developed. Otherwise, there's no time for it. Yes?
How do we improve purity by doing my portion?
How do we improve purity by?
By doing my portion, apart from depending on Krishna's mercy.
By doing my position, my part?
Yeah.
How do we improve purity? Well, even when you're doing, one is, even when you're doing that, it's with dependency. Not like, okay, that's Krishna's part and this is my part. It's all Krishna's. And we're just, so that little part, it's just some service. I want to be a conscientious servant of Krishna. He's given me this human form of life. I'm meant to use it in a responsible way. So I have some faculties and I should use them. My faculty of reason should be used within reason. But that's ultimately, it's not, everything is dependent upon my faculty of reason. Ultimately, everything's dependent upon Krishna's mercy. So I use it within, you know, thoughtfully, wisely, as best I can, and, you know, with moderation. And then, when doing that, it's with dependency upon Krishna. Is that all right? You want some more? You have some specific thought on this topic?
Yeah, I heard from the classes, I heard a few things. Like one is, one good thing is when we are doing chanting properly with the right feelings, that can help in purity. I heard sometime back, and also today we were talking about
sure.
By doing different vidhis properly, whatever we are doing, that's how we improve purity. But I wanted to make sure
that. Well, it's this. your question fits in with vidhis. We should, everything doesn't go to how precisely and accurately I perform the vidhis and avoid the prohibitions. Endeavor certainly must be there. Even my endeavor is dependent upon Krishna. Like Prabhupada was, I'm just hearing Prabhupada describe that our ability to work, just like this hand. So if I've got this hand, I should use it. But if Krishna takes away the ability of the hand, I'm paralyzed. Even my use of my hand is dependent. So then let's just acknowledge I'm dependent. My position should be to serve Krishna. Even this hand is meant for a service to Krishna. It follows. It's very simple. So when I'm making my endeavor, I'm doing my part, abhyasa. I'm endeavoring, I'm striving, I'm practicing. Even that's a dependent one. And ultimately, that effort to be crowned with success is dependent upon Krishna. Like how Prabhupada was describing his coming to America. When he came to New York, he was moving around New York City, not even with a place to stay. And here's, you know, come on a mission for Krishna. And Krishna didn't provide a place to stay. A suitable place. Dr. Mishra gave him a studio that had no bathroom. And how does a Paka Vaishnava live in a place that has no, you can't take a bath? How can you live like that? But he lived like that because, so your endeavor is dependent upon Krishna. It wasn't that his endeavor was faulty. Krishna, you know, it was a test, and then later he found a place. Because he didn't have money, didn't have that resource. In New York City, can you imagine? So we endeavor with dependency, use the faculties that Krishna has given us, and continue within reason, carrying out our duty as best we can, then depending on Krishna. Say, Prabhupada's disciples. Prabhupada has given us, entrusted us, you know, the elder sons have the responsibility to maintain what the Father has given. So, to maintain the society, that's a challenge. What do we do? It's complex. And it's in the lives of and well-being of very sincere people are at stake. It's weighty. But, so, you know, we certainly must make some endeavor. But the endeavor has to be done with great purity, otherwise it won't come out successful. And so on. With other examples, one can look and get to understand the principle. Yeah. Go ahead. What?
Please accept my humble
obeisance. Oh, okay.
You have told us about helper dependence to go back to Godhead. But in my past, I've done so many mistakes that now it's almost like out of my hands to help.
It's always out of our hands, even before the mistakes. It's not in our hands, it's in Krishna's hand. So what to do? Is there hope? Yes. If The big mistake was we came to the material world to begin with, and after coming to the material world, we made a series of other mistakes. of varieties of extremity. So think of a loving relationship, a loving father, loving mother, and the child has misbehaved, and the child comes to the mother and father and says, I've misbehaved so badly, I'm very, so there's recognition, and there's repentance, and then there's rectification. So that's the first two precede the third one, then rectification. So let me try. Krishna, please help me. I need strength, especially in the face of whatever difficulty I might have to undergo for the mistakes I've made. I accept I have to undergo some difficulty for the mistakes I made. Please give me the strength to stay fixed in your devotion. And is there hope in that? Krishna's all powerful. We were reading in the Bhagavatam this morning that Baladev is one of the names of Balaram because he gives spiritual strength. And spiritual strength is necessary to render devotional service. Without spiritual strength, we can't render devotional service. What's the use of material strength? Again, material strength is taken away. Every material asset is taken away, but spiritual strength stays with the soul. So you, by submitting to Krishna, I made mistakes, please help me. Stay on this path with, in a proper way. Krishna will help. Even if there's some, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the example of a person that may have, a servant that may have offended his master. So he may go to the master and say, I made a big mistake, please forgive me. But the master is angry, he's mad. It's not, that's not Krishna, but it's a master, a worldly master might be angry. So he's in disfavor of the master. But still he goes on serving in a humble and sincere way. And just not looking for anything from the master, just goes on serving. And in due course of time, that Prabhupada, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, the mood from the master's side will change and gradually you'll be accepted back in the good graces of the master. That's an example that's given for the stage of anartha nivritti. So if there's something that has an obstacle in our devotional service that has arisen from some mistake or some aparad, nam-aparad, then we may have to undergo some difficulty, but Krishna will help us overcome that difficulty. Another example that's given by Vishwanath is fever. When one contracts fever, then unfortunately, not only there's suffering, but the very same thing that will help one overcome the weakness and intensity of bodily reaction with fever, one can't take. You can't eat food when you have a fever. It will aggravate the fever. So the very thing we need, we can't take. One has no appetite. Even. But if one submits to a good physician and follows the good physician's advice and takes the medicine and so on, in course of time, gradually, the hunger will arise and one can eat a little bit, and that's all. And so it's gradual. Those two examples are given in this Madhurya Kandambani that explain how if one has made mistakes or made offenses or just, you know, is in a covered condition, whatever, how that can be overcome. Anything else? Yes?
I have all of those double mind questions.
Double mind questions?
Yeah. Like, to make sure, we'll like to ask one
Okay.
Side of my mind says one thing, other side of my mind says another thing. Like in my workplace and other you know, daily life, you know, I meet so many people, and I like to share the knowledge somehow. Yet, you know, one side of my mind says, yes, go ahead, and another side of my mind says, okay, wait, you know, like, get to know the person first and see if they're spiritually inclined, and then, you know, have a conversation. So I'm wondering if, like, but also, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be meeting them the next day or how long I'll get to know them. So I'm wondering what kind of conversation I can engage, or if I should engage in any kind of conversation at all with them. Knowing that my knowledge, you know, is also very limited.
But it's nice that you have the enthusiasm to share. And your question goes specifically to what are the circumstances in which you should or shouldn't. Well, if you look at in the long run, most important thing is your own purity, not whether you share or don't share. And so to the degree the purity is there, that purity will influence the others, even if you share or don't share, just by the presence of purity. And it's good, second point is, it's good to wait in a work environment, particularly, where or any environment where people come to know that, oh, this person just wants to push his idea on other people. I've come to understand this in our current politically correct mood of, you know, what people don't like is pushing your ideas on somebody. It's not just religious ideas, it's ideas. You can have your own idea, that's nice, and other people have their idea, and that's nice. It's kind of like this Buddhist thing. I'm okay, you're okay. So, better in the work environment is to attract people by purity and by prasadam, and, you know, you have both by character and perhaps some external visible signs like a picture or a screensaver, that's, you know, something that perks their interest. Oh, what's that? Let them come and show their spirituality to you. Or they see and ask you, you know, why you don't eat with us? You know, well, how come you got this other diet thing going on? Is it religious or is it health or what is it? And even when you do that, you know, go gently. What's through the medium of a relationship that's a respectful relationship, you'll get a lot further than when you're pushing your idea on somebody. That they their language is you're pushing your ideas on us. I was at Washington University in St. Louis, and the topic was something. I forget even what it was. Paradox of Progress was the topic. So afterwards, one of the students came up and said, you know, I really like this idea of social change. It's like a buzz in colleges today, particularly on that campus. It's a super buzz. So his question was, how do you do it? And he said, you know, one of the things I don't like, and I don't want to be guilty of, is people pushing their ideas on me. Even if it's a good idea, I don't like this, the whole dynamic. I'll push back. I don't want to do the same thing, but I want to bring about social change, so how do you do it? And I said, well, two things. Service and purity. I elaborated. Find out what he wants. If you want to bring about social change, find out what they want and try to help them. make that happen and be pure. So it's not like it's a hook. It's just, you're just being a servant. And if purity is there, they'll want it. They'll ask about it. And then you can share. Then you're not pushing your idea on them, because if it's genuine purity, it's attractive. Krishna is, and you know, for you I can say, Krishna is attractive. He's all attractive. And the message of the Bhagavatam is, Krishna attracts. So you just be a little, you know, person, Bhagavat, and just there in the workplace. And people bump into you and they get some juice. You know, little glubjaman personality. Juicy glubjaman. People bump into you and get some glubjaman juice. Because you just want to serve and there's purity. So it's more the character that you carry than the message you speak and how you speak it. That's a challenge. More of a challenge even than, you know, speaking the message in a palatable way, is being pure. But it's really what will make the difference. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
His Holiness Srila Prabhupada ki jai.